Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spence calling. It's the end of the month. You didn't ask for it, but I've already paid for the studio time. So we're going to turn the table on the judges one more time. We're going to put them at the other side of the microphone, and it's time for us to play No Point. You guys have been practicing that, haven't you? Yeah, they're all looking at me nervously. Yes, hello, we've ended up back in the studio again with a bunch of sad slaggers, the unkept, unbeaten numbers of bitter ballads and camp-changing, key-moving chaos, plundering all the bits that other comedy panel quiz discussion shows have discarded. We're going to test four of our pundits in the white-hot heat of Eurovision trivia. It's points for punditry, so let's do it the other way around and meet our pundits. The man, he knows his bannock from his burn and his tourist traps from a nice place to spend your money because they give me a little bit of a kickback. He can even make Kirkcaldy sound interesting. It is the Prince of Travel. It's Ross Tilbury.
Hi, thank you for inviting me back after this last week.
I know, but you're all down. You've done the research. You know what you're doing on this one? You hope so. That's what we like to hear. If nothing but finding personal improvement. Now, there is no sequins on her, possibly because they've all landed on the floor in a hideous wardrobe malfunction that's worthy of a Lithuanian. It is the feisty Pfeiffer of Elaine Dove!
Hello, Ewan. And unlike the tune that's going on in the background, nothing in this game for doing a bed.
Yeah, look at what you could have won. Nothing. Not even your bus fare home. Right then, the man who has crashed more Eurovision parties than Richard Hammond has crashed rocket cars. It's also the man who takes to the stage, much like Richard Hammond, in a rocket car. But at least he'll have Tom Dice playing on the stereo. It's guitar man Danny Lynch.
Bonjour.
Oh, buddy, we're going to the French now, are we?
Yes, sir.
That's risky. When was the last time the French had a good song?
Pass.
Pass?
I don't know. France are probably one of my least favourite countries ever.
I gave Danny a chance to get
in an eight.
I see. I gave Danny a chance to get in an early lead. And Ross takes it. There we go. And our finalist. Our final, who made the finalist last time, who is the defending champion. One victory to his name. He's 1-1 in the parlance of the WAR ratings. The quiet, dignified matriarch of Eurovision in Scotland. That's just some of the suggestions that he passed over to me, hoping that I would use for this introduction. No, we're going to stay with the Schlager King in the house, David Elder.
Guten Abend, Ewan Vigitz.
And Germany. When was the last time Germany had a good song at Eurovision?
Oh, I think 2010 would be the answer to that one.
Oh.
They won, you know.
It's a tough one, that, you know, because everybody else really loved it. But me, sorry, I didn't like Satellite. And you know what? There we go. We're going to go minus on David on that one. They're going for obvious answers. Right, let's explain the point system that we're already channeling through. It is at 1 point. If you come up with some smart knowledge, it's quite interesting. If your points for punditry gives you something that's even stupendouser than the 1 point, then we will go up to 2 points. And for the massive amount of knowledge that is just occasionally spots of brilliance flashing through, we will have our version of Hallelujah. And as you have already spotted, minus points will be awarded for crawling, for doing things that I just don't like, for using Wikipedia, for referencing John Kennedy O'Connor's book, which is going to be a bit of a problem if we ever get John on the show. But other than that, it's minus one for anything we don't like. Like that there. Right then, 5 questions before we go into our things that you need to tell us because we don't know before our head-to-head defend the indefensible round. We'll start off with the softball as usual. Question one. Eurovision table isn't top and bottom because these are words that Eurovision fans use for other things. We have right-hand side and left-hand side. David gets a point for laughing at my joke. Right, so, the left-hand side is where all the winners are, but the right-hand side, oh, that's death, war, famine, destruction, all of that. But there are songs that promised a lot. There are songs that promised to screech up the charts, but came to a halt. Which songs were on the wrong side that you thought should have been further up the table? Our defending champion is going to go first, David.
Well, Ewan, I think a complete travesty happened in 2010 where Norway's Didrik Solitangen, who was singing My Heart Is Yours, should really have been top five. And he ended up in something like 20th place. Absolutely terrible, because he was a fantastic singer, brilliant song, written by Schlager King Fredrik Kjempe from Sweden, and Hanna Sorvag from Norway. Sorry, I'm just getting my facts in.
The problem there was, though, he was having to half all his votes with Niamh Kavanagh because they were singing the same song.
That's true.
Yeah, two songs that sounded like Loch Lomond, you know, you take the high road and I'll take that one. There, both songs sound exactly like that, so I think he got what he deserved.
Bonus points for any other Eurovision songs that sounded like Loch Lomond?
Cindy.
I think you'll find it's I'll Leave My Heart.
Yes.
You can have it. It's a high-scoring round already, but two people have already said relatively silent. Elaine, your chance to get on the score table now.
Quite a sensible answer for me, for once.
Okay, right.
And it was the last time I watched Eurovision before I actually attended, and it was in 2007, a charming little song from Latvia, Questionati by Bonaparte. I remember sitting watching it. I know I'm probably out here on my own. I remember sitting watching it, and I honestly thought it was going to win. I loved it. I thought I had Eurovision written all over it. And then Jimmy Cranky came along and stole the show.
That was the problem with that song. It did have Eurovision all over it. It was so contrived, a bit like that My Heart Is Yours. That's the kind of song that is written just to gather some votes for Eurovision, and thankfully it fell flat on its face.
Can I just say, the only reason Elaine liked that was because it had Roberto Meloni, who was in Elaine's pants the following year.
And in my defence, at the time of liking this, little did I know that my inappropriate obsession with the Pirate Master himself would have started.
The problem with Questionati is now I listen to it and all I can hear is the Go Compare adverts.
Yeah, definitely.
Nobody agreed, right? Minus all round. Everybody's just being quiet now. We're not having that. And a point for me. Right then, Ross, you're sitting there quietly.
Oh, my one's from 2010 as well. It was the fabulous Juliana Pasha from Albania. She had the best backing singers in the history of Eurovision. Three fierce divas from New York. She had a mental violinist with crazy hair. And she was dressed like something at Blake 7. And she still did not manage to get onto the left-hand side of the scoreboard. Why not?
I have a funny feeling that all the reasons you just mentioned may have been the reason she stayed on the right-hand side of the scoreboard.
Okay, but mine's a bit older than that. I've gone back to the 70s for mine.
Ooh.
And 1975, the German song by Joy Fleming was called Einlich kann ein Brücke sein. Something like that. It was a fantastic song, which was sung by an amazing big diva with a big red hair. She looked a bit like Alla Pugacheva, with a big, lovely green dress on. And her song was very much of the time. It was very sort of 70s Northern Soul type music. Really bang up to date amongst all these really other kind of boring songs. However, she did really badly and came third last. But nowadays, the table's turned, and actually she's seen as one of Germany's big sort of Eurovision divas. And everyone kind of in Germany thinks that's the one song that sort of should have done a lot better than it actually did. So for me, that is definitely the song which I think was hardest done by.
So there we go there. Of course, you can leave your comments and discussion points on all of this if you agree or disagree with any of the pundits back at the website, www.esinsight.com. And it is now time to introduce the sixth member in the studio. He is the man for whom addition poses a little bit of a problem, but that's okay. We're training him up and he will be at standard grade level 3 by this time next year. It's Simon the Scorer.
Hello.
You've been practising that line for an entire month and you've done it very well. Congratulations, Simon. And the points have been handed over to me. Last place is Ross on 4 points. We're getting cliches running already. David and Danny, who of course managed head-to-head in our first show back in December, are both equal on 5. And Elaine is storming up into the lead. 8 points. Her first time taking pole position here on No Point.
When was the last time you were on top, Elaine?
That's for Danny, not for Elaine. The toppers. We did mention them in the last show. But the toppers, when, you know, most people hand out CDs so people at the press can listen to the song if they've not already heard it. Hello? But the toppers outdid themselves. They had a gatefold CD and DVD and biography and text and a little cover that opened up, and they came out on a little cardboard pop-out with little LEDs flashing and a little chip that played their song that year. It was the tackiest, most wonderful piece of PR bump ever. What is the best item of Eurovision PR bump that you have ever seen, or in your case, ever worn?
For those of you listening back home,
which would be everybody,
I am flashing my pants, my inculto pants, to the rest of the crew, because there was underwear love going on in the press centre in 2010. Apparently, you give your pants, you get sequin pants back in return. But not only do you get sparkly pants, you get... the inculto kazoo. There is not enough kazoo at Eurovision.
Danny, PR bump.
Again, this comes from this year, and this is the one that I saw lying about in the press centre. Nobody seemed to want it, but I think for me it's the funniest was this year the Ukrainian press pack was a booklet by Alyosha. It was Sweet People, and if everyone looked at it, it was almost like some sort of coffee table book it was trying to be. I had all these pictures of her. Which Elaine has actually just got
Elaine's
to show
got it here.
It's a little booklet. It looks like it's about world peace, and it's actually put really well put together, and it's something that I think costs probably quite a lot of money to make. There's all these amazing pictures in it, but there was so many lying about the place, everyone was like, what the hell is this about? But I think it's really funny.
It still made more sense than when they handed out the footballs, blew them up, and then gave them to thousands of people that were travelling home on budget airlines with hand luggage only. What are you going to do with a Ukrainian football that you can't fit into your hand luggage?
Could I also make the point here that I think perhaps football and Eurovision in terms of the fandom don't necessarily go together 100%.
And let's also hope that lawyers who like football-based comedy quiz shows don't listen to Eurovision. David.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, the Belarusians decided they were going to give everybody in the press centre free ice cream. I think that was actually in Moscow. Peter Elfimov, and they had ice creams lorried in from Belarus to Moscow at some considerable expense, I would have to say. But I have to say, it was the creamiest vanilla I had that entire fortnight.
David, looking for points for getting Belarusian cream in the press centre. Ross.
Well, I'm at a disadvantage here because I've never been in a Eurovision press centre, so I have to come up with a cunning ploy and plan to get some of these promotional items. So, 2 years ago, I found all the contact lists on the EBU website and emailed all the press officers and said I was putting together a Eurovision event in Edinburgh, and please could they send me as much promotional material as they could. Only about four or five responded, but one of them was Hadis from Belgium, and this is much more apt for a Eurovision fan. I got a compact with powder, with a little puff, as Eurovision only can have puffs, and a mirror with Hadis written across the top of it. So there you go. Perfect for the Eurovision fan everywhere.
It's actually Hadisi, I must say.
Oh!
And she's Belgian, she's not Turkish.
Ross, finally getting the hang of the comedy interjection. Yeah. That we will call there the end of the second round. And now Simon will illustrate his massive skills. Ross is on 9 points.
Yay!
Everybody else is on more. That's what we'll do for the scores. Right then, round three. Lots of people enter Eurovision. Lots of new stars enter Eurovision, but lots of people, probably not Britain, will send established stars who already have a huge back catalogue of music. But there are acts that go to Eurovision with a song that sounds nothing like anything else they have ever done. Which artist and which Eurovision entries are the most unique to that artist? Elaine.
I struggled with this one because I go to Eurovision as a fan. I don't do the national finals, I don't do this, I don't buy the CDs to listen to all the songs that weren't good enough to get there, because I've heard the calibre of the ones that do. So my answer has to be Josh Dubovy, because nobody in their right mind would ever write that stuff. He couldn't ever possibly sing a song in that style that bad ever again. We love you, Josh. I'm very sorry, but it wasn't your fault.
Danny.
Yil Jonsson, it's pronounced it correctly, from Sweden 98. She started off as a sort of ballad schlager queen, and then all of a sudden she just totally changed, and nowadays she is known as the Swedish Shania Twain. She's released about 10 different albums. All she sings sort of all these country cover versions of sort of other well-known songs, but nowadays that's all she does. You would never see her set foot on a Eurovision stage again.
I think for me it has to be Malena Ernman, Sweden, La Voix, and she proved she did have La Voix, or she does have La Voix, because she's one of the most highly rated female opera singers in the world.
Jeremy Clarkson impression. Is it worth it? No, it's not. David?
I think I'd probably go right back to the 60s for this, because Sandy Shaw's repertoire up to Puppet and a String was nothing like that. She was a very contemporary artist in the 60s. She sang great pop songs, and then she came along with the unbelievably uber kitsch Puppet on a String, stormed to the first big victory for Eurovision, for the UK Eurovision, but it was a song that was nothing like she's ever done, and I have to say nothing she's ever done ever since, because she hates it. I think she's kind of forgiven it now. I know she re-recorded it a couple of years ago, but you know, that wasn't her, really.
It seems to be the UK at the time, though, seemed to always go for the most cheesiest entry. I mean, if you imagine Cliff Richard, Congratulations, Olivia Newton-John, Long Live Love as well, and even straight through to Sonia when she sang Better Than You, that was probably the cheesiest song in there as well.
It was, yeah.
Every year they seem to go for, even Scooch is another example, they seem to keep going for the cheesy songs every year, and I think that's what the UK's problem is. The public seem to have this thing in their mind of Eurovision equals cheese, and all these other countries that send sort of really contemporary artists that do really well now are the countries like Russia, who sent Dima Bilan, who's one of the biggest stars, and even Lena from Germany. Sorry, I'm going to rant here. Even Lena from Germany, who was probably one of the most modern songs this year, and it just goes to show that if you send something modern and contemporary, you'll do really well.
I'm now going to be really worried, because what is Danny going to say and is tell us something we don't know rant round? I think you've been reading a page ahead in your own notes there, Danny. Right then, let's take that one there and see how we are for the scores on the doors. Ross is sitting back there on 11 points, but we're getting a nice spread there. David, maintaining a nice steady progress on 14. Danny making a late run there in that round, taking him up to 17, but still in the lead, but with a slightly diminished margin now. It's getting ever closer. 2 points in the lead, we have Elaine Duff. Right then, I'll hide the script, because it's now time for the golden envelope round. I have the answer in my bag, in this envelope, for the next question. Anyone who matches it will get a bonus 5 points. I've already talked about people coming back to Eurovision last hour, but there is one man who has done Eurovision 19 times. He's attempted it 20 times, and that is Ralph Siegel, the composer extraordinaire, who, with a winning ratio of 0.045, isn't that good at winning song, but to be honest, that is better than Malta's. But what is it about Ralph? What is it about his songs? Which is your favourite Ralph Siegel song, and why? Let's start with Ross on this one.
Well, Ralph Siegel is just so multi-talented. I mean, he doesn't just write for Germany, he writes for other countries in Eurovision too. So we have to go for 1980, Le Papa Penguin for Luxembourg, Sophie et Magalie. Come on, one was dressed in pink, one was dressed in blue, and we had a man dressed as a penguin.
And apparently he got into quite a lot of trouble.
Where did you do the research?
Last night.
Where did you do the research?
On Google. See what I did there?
I did there.
And well, even better than that, but yeah, he got in a lot of trouble for the contract he had with the girls. But even better than that, they then brought out a version. The French version of Pingu brought out that song and went to number one for 3 weeks in France. Geek fact over.
There we go. Danny.
Well, I know the worst thing she ever had was Luxembourg 85, Children, Kinder, Enfant. Then we heard that monstrosity. It was six people, all from all over Europe. They had some British people in there as well. And it was just singing sort of Frère Jacques, but in French and German and a bit of English. It was just dreadful. However, for me, the best Ralph Siegel song is when he's at his uber cheesiest, and it has to be Mikado, Forgiving the Party, probably because the 1994 contest was a year just full of dreary ballads mostly. It was a really good contest, but it was just every sort of slow ballads. And all of a sudden out come these three girls, Meh, Kat and Doe. I thought there was Melanie, Catherine and Dorcas. What kind of name is Dorcas? I mean, who calls a child Dorcas, really?
Anyway, one of Genghis Khan called his daughter Dorcas.
Maybe it's a... it must be a... is it his daughter?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Steve Bender.
No, that's Melanie Bender. Melanie.
Oh, sorry, you're right, sorry.
Bender.
Well. Melanie, actually, I've got their albums, I was such a sad fan. But anyway, it was a year where full of all these so dreary ballads, and all of a sudden they came out with their We're Giving the Party, which means we're giving a party. It's quite clever the way they did that, you know, sort of made it sound as if it was English. And it was just sort of the uber cheesiness with an uber crazy man going, oh yeah, through the song. And I just thought it was just hilarious, it was so funny.
David.
I would go back to one of Ralph's first entries and I'd pick Genghis Khan, just because 1979, it was the kind of peak of disco. Genghis Khan were a group that was put together by Ralph Siegel and Bert Meininger and sang a song called Genghis Khan, and it was very Boney M at the time. It sounds like Rasputin. It's a fantastic song. It's still one of the ones that gets people up at parties today, so yeah, I love it.
I think you're right, but I think looking back at it now, a lot of people say they're singing a song about a sort of mass murderer from Mongolia that went around killing all these people, and sort of to dance about laughing, going ha ha ha. I think that doesn't really sit right with me. I think
The thing that made me first go out to Eurovision was my first visit to Eurobash at the disco in 2007, and up until then, I thought the definition of gay was just, you know, happy go lucky. I then witnessed Let's Get Happy and Let's Be Gay at this disco, and oh my god, I did not realise that sometimes Eurovision's a bit camp. I believe it was at Lou, Germany, 2003, and to this day it's still the one song guaranteed me to get me on the dance floor with a lot of happy-go-lucky men.
Oh, bless. Right, well, while the scores are being added up, we will give Simon an extra task. Simon, to the microphone, please, to open the golden envelope and read out what we have.
Genghis Khan.
So it's 5 bonus points to David Elder. Now, the scores just after the halfway point. We have Ross has done quite well. He's got himself ahead. He's now on 16. Danny is in third place on 21. David makes a good save with that golden envelope round and gets himself onto 22. And extending that lead by one more point, Elaine takes herself up to 25. Woo! One last Eurovision question before we head off into the Tell Us Something We Don't Know and our final head-to-head. Songs at Eurovision, they all last 3 minutes. They all have to be sung live to a TV audience of 125 million TV viewers. Doesn't matter how good the PR was. It doesn't matter how much money you've spent on the advertising. It doesn't matter how good the video is. It's 3 minutes live. And sometimes you can catch perfection and break yourself right up to the top 5 of the table. So, pundits, the song that came from nowhere but still did well at Eurovision. The dark horse that you would like to ride all the way to the Black Beauty finale.
Ooh, I misses.
France 2010.
Okay, shall we have Elaine first then?
I was just referring to the dark horse, that's all.
Oh, bless. Well, we'll give her time to get herself together. Danny, do you want to take this one first?
Yeah, for me, it has to be 2003 Belgium, Sanomi by Urban Trad. One of these songs which I remember, I see David rolling his eyes. He's almost rolling his eyes as if his contact's about to fall out or something.
Oh, God,
but anyway,
the
basically,
life.
The headlines were dominated that year by Tattoo, who were sort of a big Russian superstar. And a lot of the songs had sort of big stage productions. And all of a sudden comes along this song, which was done in an imaginary language. And it didn't really stand out very well. But then all of a sudden on the show, it kind of stood out a little bit from all these sort of big, massive productions. This was a nice little simple song that was just a nice bit of nice melody. And all of a sudden it just started racking up all these 8s, 10s and 8s, 10s and 12s. And no one really expects that to do well. And it actually almost won. It only lost by something like 2 points. So for me, I think that is definitely sort of the one which came from absolutely nowhere that no one would have expected to be top 10.
Okay, Elaine.
For me, probably 2008, and although it was quite a nice song, was Norway, Maria Haukas Storeng, yes, with Hold On, Be Strong, particularly because it was a contest. If you actually look at the top 10, it was dominated by New Europe, shall we call it. And I think she finished fifth and was one of the only old Europe songs to get there. And I think it showed just how well she'd done, because she obviously got a lot of the Eastern Europe vote. So that took me by surprise.
Now, she did have the advantages. I remember, right, she was running in last in the running order. So she did have a bit of an advantage. But again, a strong song and a confident, simple performance. Dave?
Yeah, that song was actually the highest Western song that year, so they did really well. And I think also it was again down to the simple fact that it was a nice, sorry Elaine for touching your breast. again, it was a nice simple song which they did really well. And I actually think the one that saved it was actually the hand action. Do you remember when she did the true, true, true bit, when she went true, 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 true. And every time anyone hears that song, they keep doing that accent. And she had a nice little walk bit as well. So I think the lovely looking girl with the dancers doing hand actions sort of made it
fabulous
really well.
Frog.
David sneaking in there. Yes. I'm going to steal a point right at the end for that purple number.
Johanna, take note of Fabulous Frog.
Ross.
Well, purple again, 1993 for me, Norway, and it's Alamina Tanker. A really sweet, pretty little song. Sounded a bit like Mary Hopkins from the 1970s, but purple was the colour that year, of course, because Niamh wore purple and she won, and Poor Little Sonia came second with Bed of the Devil, you know, also wearing purple.
I actually found that CD single, Ali Made Tanker, in a CD shop in Byers Road, I think, for 50p in 1993. Do you want it?
Go on then.
Hey, go on, give it to you.
David.
I will be a little bit controversial here. If you remember the last show, we talked about Johanna and her toilet roll dress. For me, last 2 years ago, 2009, that'd be in Moscow, for me, that song came from absolutely nowhere, and it came up, and it was second in Moscow. How, I will never understand, because to me it was a complete dirge. But I do appreciate a lot of people loved it. She was very pretty, gave a very emotional performance of what was, I suppose, a nice ballad.
For me, that's a really good example of how a song can be remixed and turned into a really good song. Another example was Turkey 2003. Remember Sertab when she won?
Ooh, absolutely.
The first version of that song was just kind of, yeah, it's okay. But as soon as they sort of the new version,
you lifted it up.
With that kind of amazing intro, that was kind of stood out. So I think for me, for that, when Johanna had that nice long note when she held just after the key change, that was just sort of a big sort of spine tingling moment, I thought.
Sorry, just one last one that suddenly came to me that came from nowhere for me and won just before the Olsen Brothers, Fly on the Wings of Love. Nice. What appeared to be two nice little men singing a nice little song with two nice little guitars just suddenly had a moment in the arena where people just looked around and thought, this could win.
The pyrotechnics, the glow sticks and the vocoder also helped.
They didn't help Anna Bergendahl.
Oh! You only get one hallelujah, but you can get 3 points on that one there. Right then, that's the end of questions proper as we head in to tell us something we don't know. The scores are very tight. Remember, two of you are going to be going through to the head-to-head final, so there is still all to play for, unless you're Ross, who's on 17. Because everybody, this is going to be interesting. Ross, you know, you could make it. You could. You could have a really good round here. You're 17. David, 23 and in third place. You've got a little bit to make up. Danny, 27. Now, you're going to have to defend that lead because Elaine has screamed ahead in that round and puts herself on 35 points. So we'll go in reverse order from the back. Ross doesn't want to tell us anything. Oh, bless.
My participation is pointless.
Oh.
I could talk about pointless. I've done it so many times already.
No. Repetition is not allowed. Ross, there... going for the lowest score, which is what you have to do in Pointless, but not in Nulp 1. Right then, third place coming into this last round. David, tell us something we don't know.
Okay, something you don't know. In 2007, I was lucky enough to be in Helsinki for Eurovision, and my friend Robert and I were asked along to a breakfast television show to talk about Eurovision, because we were fans from another country, and they wanted to know what we thought about it. So we were sitting in the studio, and we were quite happy listening to this bloke chatting away in Finnish, and he said something about our names, David Elder, Robin Scott, and then he mentioned Eurovision fans. But what we hadn't realised, that the Finnish for Eurovision fan is actually Eurovision fanny. So for the rest of eternity, Robin and I will be known as Eurovision fannies.
Oh, getting in a good old 1950s end of the pier joke there from David. Danny.
Okay, one thing for me was another Eurovision thing. It was on the flight on the way to Belgrade. I had the fortunate way of going with an airline called JAT, who are the Serbian Airlines. And the flight was served by this sort of woman who had sort of a moustache. And they were supposed to have lunch, and they gave us a meal, and it looked like to be this sandwich, which I have no idea what it was inside it. It looked as if it was some sort of luncheon meat that had been lying there for weeks. But luckily, sitting behind me was good old Andrew Abraham. So it just goes to show that the BBC spare no expenses when it comes to sending their people to Eurovision. He ate his, though, so maybe that's what happened. Maybe he got food poisoning.
But now, Elaine, let's defend that lead. Tell us something we don't know.
Okay, I'm going to... Nothing to do with Eurovision, a little interesting fact. When I was born, I was born not just breech, but double breech. I was folded in two. I came out... Can we stop the laughing? I'm even going to do an image. I was came out bottom first. You know how a lot of people get born head first because it's the biggest part of you?
Uh-huh.
Yes, well, my poor mother gave birth naturally. And to this day, I can still touch my toes.
That how explains why you...
Don't go there. So there we go. We have our scores. Let's rack them up and see who's going to be going head to head and defending the indefensible. Ross, surprisingly, is in the lead. No, he's not. He's still on 17. Making a good run at the end of it, but in third place, our defending champion is not going to be going through. 28 points to David Elder. Danny doing enough to get him into the final once again on 30 points. And Elaine making her first appearance in defending indefensible, 35 points, and takes the lead. So, Elaine, you scored the most points. You get the choice. Do you want to go first or second?
Oh, I'll go first.
All right, then. 20 seconds to defend whatever is said here. Fill the 20 seconds. Be convincing, and the victory can be yours. Are you ready?
Yes.
Sequin jock straps should be banned from Eurovision.
Of course they should be banned from Eurovision. They're absolutely vulgar for a start. All that they actually give is the filthy girls will sit at press conferences and think, I want one of them. What could I do? I'll get me pants off. I'll hand them to them. They take over serious press conferences. They turn them into a farce. And if, I just think it's disgusting.
Still talking when the bell goes. Congratulations! Right then, Danny, you got a lot to go here.
Yeah, let's see if we can manage.
You don't want to go two for two in the failures, do we? Right then, we ready? 20 seconds on the clock, please. The United Kingdom can only win Eurovision again if we ask Bob Geldof and Midge Ure to write the song.
Of course. I mean, think about that amazing song, Do They Know It's Christmas? It's one of the biggest selling Christmas songs ever. It creates a lot of money for charity. If the UK chose Bob Geldof and Midge Ure to do it for us, we'd have all those votes from the European nations. And not only that, we could probably get Christmas number one. Can you imagine, not only would we get number one from May all the way through to Christmas, can you imagine how much money we'd make?
Oh, that is a tough one. Is it going to go to Danny? Is it going to go to Elaine? You know, Elaine just seemed to be negative on everything she loved. Danny really put some thought into that. I think victory is going to go to Danny.
Yay.
And Elaine is now going to go in the half.
Sulk.
Oh, what a shame. But it does mean that sequin jock straps can stay at Eurovision. So there is a bonus to it. Right then, I've been Ewan Spence. We've got four of our jukebox jury judges, which will be coming back next Friday, joining us here. So it is a thank you to David Elder.
Good night.
It's thank you to Ross Tilbrook.
That's for Daniel.
Thank you to Danny Lynch.
Hey, do.
And Elaine, are you still talking to me to say goodbye?
Whatever.
You know what the only thing that bothers me now? It's getting the URL out, www.escinsight.com, making sure you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well. And to cue one final time for this show,
guitars!
Guitars!